Coming up on KUCB News, the local search is over for a lost ring seal, and Alaska senators are fighting Coast Guard funding cuts. Stay tuned.
Local news is sponsored by Alpha Welding and Boat Repair Incorporated, providing boat repairs and conversions in Unalaska Dutch Harbor for the last 25 years. Our professionals are trained to use heavy-duty equipment, including boom trucks, shears, brakes, a water jet cutting machine, and a punch machine. Our fully equipped metal fabrication welding shop and machine shop are located at 1149 East Broadway. Alpha Welding and Boat Repair can be reached at 581-1785 or 581-2666.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Thursday, March 9th, 2017. The Alaska Volcano Observatory has lowered the alert levels for two Aleutian volcanoes. Bogoslav is back at the intermediate orange level following a powerful eruption Tuesday night. The volcano hasn't produced any ash since that three-hour blast, and its seismicity has died off. Still, scientists say Bogoslav could blow again with little warning. Meanwhile, Cleveland Volcano, 45 miles west of Nikolski, has been quiet since a small eruption last month. Satellite data shows that lava has cooled within the crater, so scientists have downgraded Cleveland to a low-level yellow advisory. Most of the time, a seal in Unalaska doesn't attract too much attention, but a ring seal is a different story. The marine mammals live near ice and are typically found further north. So when a sick ring seal appeared and then vanished last week, the community united to find it. Zoe Sobel of Alaska's Energy Desk has the story.
It's late Friday afternoon, and Melissa Good is sitting on her front step filling out labels for a dog carrier. And no, the crate is not for her dog. It holds a yearling seal.
Yeah, he looks like he'd just be nice and light and fluffy, like a fluff ball, but not the case. It's heavier than he looks. It's really dense. Like 2 feet long, probably about 30 pounds.
Good works for Sea Grant, and she'd been on the lookout for the sick animal for a while. The seal appeared in Unalaska in late February, but before Good had the authorization to pick it up, it vanished. She thinks a fox scared the animal back into the water. A couple of days later, Good was doing routine water sampling in a bay, and there it was.
So I wrapped it in my jacket and carried it down the beach a little ways until I had cell phone reception, and then got someone to come down with a kennel. And so we're going to get the seal out on the 4 o'clock freighter.
When Good saw the seal, it looked lethargic. Birds were pecking at its fur. A half hour before the flight, Good grabs the crate off the back porch, carries it to a truck, and starts the engine. She drives across town to the airport to check the seal in for the flight.
So he will be flying to Anchorage free of charge, in first class even.
Together, the seal and carrier clock in at 49 pounds. Paperwork is filed, labels are stuck onto the crate, and
he is ready to fly. He is
cleared by the customs.
While waiting for the flight, Good decides to name the seal Jack. But at the Alaska Sea Life Center in Seward, veterinarians say Jack is actually a girl. Carrie Gertz is one of the vets there. She says this seal is small for her species.
She is having some challenges maintaining an appropriate body temperature, so we are only giving her limited swims and mostly letting her be dry and warm up.
Jack is in better shape than a lot of the other ring seals the Sea Life Center has admitted. Even so, Gertz thinks it'll take Jack at least a couple of months to recover. Gertz says between 5 and 15 live animals are admitted to the center for care each year, and Jack is the first one this year. But what was a ring seal doing in Unalaska? Gertz doesn't have an easy answer.
It could be a matter of just being off course or kind of looking for a new area to explore.
Kind of like a kid running off to join the circus. For now, Gertz is focused on getting Jack back to full strength. As with all strandings, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration makes the final call of what happens to the animal. But in this case, Gertz thinks it's unlikely she'll be released into the wild. When she's healthy, Jack will be sent to live in a marine mammal center. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Zoe Sobel in Unalaska.
Meanwhile, NOAA received a surprise last week. The Trump administration has proposed deep cuts to the organization, which focuses on fisheries and climate science. As reported in the Washington Post, NOAA could lose 26% of its overall budget, and the Sea Grant program, which has more than a dozen projects in Alaska, could be hit particularly hard. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
This is the wildest ride I ever remember.
Carol Kaner is a communications specialist at Sea Grant. She's worked there for about 25 years. And last week, she found out that the organization could lose all of its federal funding by scrolling through Facebook.
Part of the reason I've worked here so long is that I believe in this program. I think it's an excellent program, and I've loved my work here, and I've felt like it made a difference. And that's a big thing.
Sea Grant helps train villages to monitor coastal erosion, tracks the economic vitality of the seafood industry, and studies the impact of climate change, among many, many other things. The organization supports research at 33 universities nationwide, including the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Kaner says Sea Grant plays a vital role, nationally and in the state, so the news that the Trump administration wanted to eliminate the program was hard to swallow.
I was thinking this is crazy. Sea Grant has such a huge return on investment. Why would you cut a program that gives you a major return on investment if you're trying to grow the economy?
NOAA is administered by the U.S. Department of Commerce. The Washington Post obtained a memo that said the new administration wants to, quote, prioritize rebuilding the military. It mentions the trade-offs and choices inherent in pursuing the goals. Paula Kullenberg, the Alaska director of Sea Grant, says she's not sure why the program didn't make the cut.
I have no idea. Maybe this was an easy mark and it was something on a spreadsheet that looked available. I don't think that there was, as far as I know, there wasn't any in-depth analysis.
Sea Grant has been in Alaska for about 47 years, and Kullenberg says the program has been threatened before. She says the Reagan administration tried to nix the funding, but Congress chose to reinstate it. This time around, she hopes it goes the same way.
You know, it feels like a bit of a blow. It feels like a bit of a lack of confidence, for sure, or a lack of support by the administration. So I can't really say that I'm confident, but I'm certainly hopeful.
The White House and lawmakers will have the upcoming months to decide. Kullenberg is meeting with NOAA this week in Washington, D.C., to discuss a game plan. The next fiscal year starts in October. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
Both of Alaska's U.S. senators wrote to the White House budget director yesterday asking him to spare the Coast Guard. According to the Washington Post and other outlets, President Donald Trump is planning to reduce funding for the Coast Guard by nearly 12% in his budget request to Congress. Nearly two dozen senators have signed a letter asking Office of Management and Budget Director John Mulvaney to reconsider. They say the cut would run counter to the president's goal of greater military investment, as well as make it harder for the Coast Guard to stop drug traffic. The letter also cites the nation's need for more icebreakers as Arctic ship traffic increases. Among the 23 senators who signed the letter, the only Republicans were the Alaskans, Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan, as well as Mississippi Senator Roger Wicker. As the competition heats up in Iditarod 45, Wade Mars led two past champions into the Ruby Checkpoint last night. 350 miles into the trail, racing is finally underway as mushers plot their next moves along the winding Yukon River. KNOM's Ben Matheson reports.
Willow musher Wade Mars arrived first into the checkpoint a little before 7 o'clock.
There's a lot of people out here. Am I the first one here?
You are.
Wow. That's cool.
Mars quickly tells checkers that he's declaring his 24-hour rest, and he sets off to settle in for the rest. He sets down beds of straw.
This is some nice straw.
And tosses out hunks of frozen salmon, which the team devours.
I mean, these guys are monsters. They're screaming coming up the hill. I mean, literally barking going down the trail there. It's pretty awesome to see. I've never had a team this animated and amped up, but they're definitely seemed like they were just down a notch.
Teams are now taking their 24-hour or 8-hour Yukon breaks as they leapfrog one another on opposing schedules. Mushers declare their breaks to checkers, but they don't commit to it and can leave if they want to. Mars was confident in his plan.
Hopefully it works out good. Yep. As long as Dallas does what I expect him to do, it'll work out really well.
That is, he's expecting Dallas to do the same as 2015, when he took his 8-hour break here, camped outside Galena, and did his 24 down the trail in Huslia.
So I gotta try to play his game on him and get a step ahead of him, which we are right now, which is perfect. So now I just have to play my cards right.
46 minutes later, Dallas Seavey arrives in all black.
I'm going to declare 24.
Okay.
And I'm going to declare an 8. And I'm going to declare I'm indecisive. But right. Most likely 24.
Well,
we're planning on a 24.
Okay. We're
Seavey pulls out three resting dogs and sprints up and down the dog line doing chores. He throws down thin pieces of foam, camping pads, a novel addition to the straw piles used to keep dogs cozy. The stretch from Tanana to Ruby is the longest on the trail, nearly 120 miles. Along the way, both Seavey and Mars rested about 4 hours to break up the journey. After leaving Wednesday morning at 1 a.m., the two camped near each other for a morning rest. Hours later, they found themselves parked a few feet from one another in Ruby. That was close enough to swap race plans, or at least tentative race plans, as they worked along their dog lines.
You taking your 24?
I think so, yeah.
I said, why not? It's cold out there.
Dallas's dad, Mitch Seavey, pulled into Ruby third and says he'd be sticking around for 4 to 6 hours.
Nothing about this team that looks like they need to be 24 now.
The elder Seavey pulls two dogs out of the sled that he's rested along the way on a schedule he described as secret. The next two mushers were cagey as well. Nicholas Petit arrived fourth, wearing a polar bear ruff from Kotzebue. He was put off by the steep hills and sharp turns getting back onto the trail, and didn't think it was a safe idea to attempt with a supercharged dog team. Arriving in fifth, Yor Elsom was less committal about his plans.
You know, it's always good to declare your 8, because if I was to oversleep now, nothing bad would happen. So, we'll see.
As the sleepless nights add up, mushers will focus on avoiding mistakes and exploiting any that they see from their competitors. I'm Ben Matheson in Ruby.
Mitch Seavey has since taken charge on the run out of Ruby and toward Galena, followed by Yor Olsom, Nicolas Petit, and Pete Kaiser. Once teams hit Galena, they'll detour north to Huslia and then swing back down to the Yukon River checkpoint of Koyukuk. The team has also pulled out of the race. Mark May of North Pole scratched in Tanana last night, citing concern for his dog team. He's the first musher to pull out since the race began. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.